Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. We missed last week. Sorry.
Oh, it was Thanksgiving. You know, I mean.
Yeah, well, you know, nobody listened. Actually, even this week and the rest of the year is pretty lame because even the network TV people, they all know they're showing nothing but reruns until the first of the year. People, I don't know what happens. People just, maybe they actually sit around the dinner table and discuss things. I don't know.
Yeah, they're all watching the U-Log.
Yeah, right. That's what they do.
I remember that was always on Channel 11, WPIX in New York. Everywhere you go, they put the U-Log on.
It's just a burning log.
Yeah, just a burning log for like days.
Yeah, on TV.
Yeah. You know, but if we did just put reruns on, it would kind of sound like what we're going to talk about, which is Europe, which is the crazy things that are coming out of that area. Facebook, you know, lots of things I lined up tonight. Probably we could have it as a perpetual show that it really doesn't have to be changed.
Well, not until one of these guys finally bites the bullet and goes down.
Yeah. And that was supposedly going to be close to happening last week with what was going on with Italy, that there was a big problem with Italy. And then lo and behold, over the weekend at, I guess it was about 5 o'clock on Sunday evening, there is a news item that comes out. Flash. $799 billion is going to be used by the IMF as a backstop and guarantee for Spain and Italy. And everybody's like, oh my God, that's a lot of money. It's tremendous. S&P futures flew up. The euro flew up. Everything is exciting till somebody says, I went to the IMF site. I dug through their financials and found that there's only about, you know, $250 billion available. And I'm thinking, well, where's that going to come from? I don't understand how they get $800 billion all of a sudden. And this is going to totally drain them, plus put them, you know, in worse shape. So I'm trying to figure out where the money's going to come through. So I write one of the people who wrote this story from Bloomberg. And I said, you know, I got a crazy question. I said, first of all, we know that the IMF was against this. Second of all, where are they going to come up with this money from? And a few other questions I asked. So I get a response that says, you're absolutely right. We've talked about this. We got some other confirmation about this, that something is a little strange. Lo and behold, about 4 or 5 hours later, IMF comes out and says, absolutely not true. And that's how we started our Monday.
Well, most people still think it's great.
Yeah, no, hey, wonderful.
Now, there was a kind of a puff piece 2 weeks ago on 60 Minutes with Christine Lagarde. Mm-hmm. And she talked about, you know, the IMF and all the rest of it, and the fact that they have 800 million or billion at their disposal from various, I guess, guarantors.
Right.
The piece mentioned, there was a bunch of propaganda in this piece that was like the tip off people about certain things. The main one being that the USA has got nothing to do with it anymore. We apparently had helped the EU during the 2008 collapse, and I guess a lot of money, like in the trillions, went to Europe through the Federal Reserve, you know, that hasn't been audited.
Right.
And it appears as if we're done with it. We have some.
That's what she said?
No, that's what the report said.
That's crap.
I'm not
of course,
so
we're
sure.
Head deep. We're head deep. First of all, we're
60%
of the IMF.
I think we are, but the way the report kind of indicated was that the Russians and the Chinese, especially the Russians, are going to be suckered into picking up the next tab.
That may be the case. I mean, they have China has a important trading factor with them, and they are also very much involved with their currency as a diversification factor. Russia, again, trading factor. Trading partner with them, much closer in proximity, obviously. But at the same time, though, we've already opened up lines of credit swaps. We've already done a lot of things to try to calm the situation. And don't forget that our banks are very much embroiled in this. As a matter of fact, just tonight at about, I'll say it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, right after the markets closed, futures closed, and they reopened, and all of a sudden they shot down. And the reason was that Standard & Poor's downgraded a slew of banks, domestic and foreign. Bank of America was downgraded, cut, I think, one or two notches. So was Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo. You know, anybody that was involved, J.P. Morgan was cut from, I believe, an A-plus to an A. And Chinese banks were – there's a couple of Chinese banks that were actually, I think – I don't know if they were upgraded, but they were definitely put up a little bit. And there was a gigantic, really an enormous list of banks that were downgraded tonight. That did not make the world feel happy. No. Now, of course, on the heels of that, what do you get? What do you think you get? You get some kind of a statement out of the EU. Something like, we've finally come to an agreement on how we're going to use this emergency fund, and we're going to leverage it up now, and all this stuff's going to happen. And there's one. I'm thinking, you know, it's by the time that came out, it had to be 11 or 12 or 1 in the morning. Do these guys stay up all night, or they just have this trinkets available?
They're drinking at some bar until about 12:31, and they make a decision, and they find the one guy who can actually speak, because maybe there's a teetotaler in there, and they push him out in front of the microphone and make him say what they've decided while they were in the drinking club.
So there's basically –
that's my guess.
You get all these central bankers together.
What are you going to do with a bunch of bankers? You're going to be drinking.
Right. So what you do is their way of doing things is you have a designated central banker that's going to actually be the non-drinker.
The non-drinker. He's like a designated – right, exactly. He has to sit there and take notes, and it rotates. So not everybody, not one guy's stuck. Unless the guy doesn't like to drink, I mean, it's possible. And he takes all the notes, and the next thing you know, he goes out and he presents himself as the – as though there was a big meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what else could it be?
I don't know. But it really, you can't, seriously, you cannot, and this is everybody listening, you cannot listen to what is being said right now. You can't trust what you read.
They're lying.
They're lying. There's something really, really wrong about all the things that are going on when you hear such incredible and desperate discussions. Tonight, they also talked about they're going to the IMF and somewhere else they mentioned they're going for help now. Well, wait a minute. We just heard that you have enough money and you're leveraging it up, and now you're going to the IMF? I mean, which is it? And if going to the IMF, wait a minute, are things that bad all of a sudden that you need to get outside assistance in this? So, and then you got to kind of look at even what they say, that they're going to leverage up. What does that mean? Well, it's BS is what it means. They're going to take the money that they have, and instead of applying it directly, they're going to use pieces of it to back instead of 100% of the bond, let's say they back 30% of a bond. And they say, you know, these bonds will be backed partially by the EU or the Emergency Financial Stability Fund. And if you think about that, they could do three times or so as many bonds backing them up. So they consider that a much bigger fund. That's the kind of math they're doing. I'm not kidding, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're not. But the point is that this is like a carnival act, right, where they're, you know, they got all those plates spinning. And when one plate hits the deck and the guy panics, the whole thing is coming down.
Right. And this is also because Greece last week said, you know, you remember when we said that we'll take a 21% haircut? And a haircut means that the bond holders are going to have to, instead of get 100% of their money back, something less than that. And they said, we agreed to a 21% in July. Remember? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you remember how we recently said 50%? Yeah, yeah, we're good. 50%, everybody agreed to 50%. And somehow, miraculously, the credit default swaps aren't going to be called in, and there's no default here, okay? You know, we went behind your backs last week to all the creditors and so see if we can get them to take a 75% haircut. They went behind all the backs of the people that they were dealing with to get this $100 billion and went to the creditors to see if they'll take even a bigger haircut now.
Wow.
And it's unbelievable. I could give you story after story about, you know, them not signing that. They're not going to sign the guarantee in writing for the $100 billion. They said their word is good enough.
I mean, seriously, that's a good one. Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Our word's good enough. for $100 billion. My word's good.
Yeah, it's not like it's not $1 trillion, for goodness sakes. It's only $100 billion. So anyway, that's some of the things that are going on there, and there is a lot that is happening in terms of Bank of America. Bank of America is now trading at about $5.05 per share. Amazing.
Yeah, that's got to be rock bottom.
That's yeah.
Well, although it's probably
rock
not.
Bottom is six.
Rock bottom is zero. Rock bottom was six.
At six, we were like, hey, maybe this is a good buy. You know,
no,
like,
I never said that.
No. Somebody in my office said, you know, when does it become a buy? I said,
10 cents?
I can't tell you. I really
five
I can't
cents.
Tell you.
15 maybe. Cents.
But the problem is, you go into five. If we go into five tomorrow, overnight it was trading or after hours after the downgrades at about 5.05. If it goes under five, and not just nips five, but goes under five, you know, and 4.90 and stays there, big problems. Because now you have a threshold level where certain funds, mutual funds, certain hedge funds, certain investors cannot invest in something under five. This is a, there's a potential.
Right, there's a rule.
Yep. There's a potential delisting. There's a potential problem for margin.
Which would really slam it. This thing would go down to 350, $2, who knows.
Mm-hmm. And that's called, we call that a flush. You know, when you get a flush down.
Yeah.
Now that may be a part, you know, if you see just a major whoosh, you know, that may be something to trade, but I mean, not to own, you know, not to keep. And then you got to look at all the big guys that are holding this that recently bought in more. Paulson, Fairholme Fund. And a lot of these boys bought in and doubled their, you know, and
yeah,
their
good positions. For Paulson. I think that's good. He deserves it. So, well, talking about Bank of America, let me ask you just kind of a rhetorical question about the PEG, the price earnings growth number.
It has one?
Well, yeah, and there's a, you know, what explain is like if you have a PEG of one, isn't that like kind of ideal? And if it's two, it's maybe the stock's a little overpriced. And if it's minus two, it's like underpriced. Generally speaking.
Yeah. It's a PE ratio. PE ratio is a kind of a standalone number that everybody talks about, absolutely meaningless to anybody.
Right.
Because, it's just like saying, you know,
but you look at the PEG. I'm always looking at the PEG. Yeah. I mean, I'm always looking for a PEG that's less than one or.
Less than one means that there is the potential for the growth of the shares over the future to be greater than the PE. When you divide it, so therefore there is growth potential. It may be undervalued. So
right.
Under
and
one
course,
is undervalued. Overvalued is over one.
Over
wacko
one.
Is two.
Yeah, two is really off the wall. Right. Although a lot of stocks go. So
I know you. There's a punchline coming. There's a punchline.
So
coming.
What do you think the PEG of Bank of America is? Without looking,
I'm not looking. I honestly, I would think it would be hard to calculate because of earnings issues. It's got to. At five, there's no really.
44.
Oh, that's bad.
44.
Really?
I have never seen a PEG of 44. Wow. That means that the stock should be selling for about 25 cents.
Yeah, it's well overvalued.
It's way. Yeah, 5 years from now, it's like. So the PEG of Bank of America is 44.
What is Citi while you're there?
Oh, geez. That's S-I-T-I. C-I-T-I, right?
C-C.
C-C.
No, one C.
It's just C. I'm always thinking of City, that other thing. City, whatever it's called.
Yeah, City.
The PEG for City is 0.5, which is right.
Hmm.
0.5 is the – I was thinking minus, that we were the lower number. But no, it's 0.5, which is like minus 1.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So they're fine.
Yeah, screaming buy. So the trade is –
Well, actually, it is a screaming buy compared to Bank of America.
Yeah, so that trade would set up a spread trade where you could short Bank of America theoretically and go long Citi. And Citi, in theory.
That's a great idea.
You're just looking at two different things. But that you would go.
Same thing. Wells Fargo, the PEG is 0.65.
Yeah, and you would go, you'd find a stock like that. You'd find something that, again, just using PEG, you find the stronger of the two, you buy it, and you short the other one. The only problem with that is that it's. You know, these market conditions, like, for example, Monday, you saw that market really ramp up, right? It was the crappiest of crap stocks that moved up. It was all the ones that were beaten down recently that haven't really done well, that just flew.
Yeah.
And the good ones kind of just hung out there. So,
well, that was supposedly based – I mean, this rally, which is – I was – wow, looking at this rally. was based on these Black Friday sales.
Yeah, it started with the lie out of the IMF. Well, not they didn't lie, but somebody else did. That's where it started, because the futures really ran up, the euro ran up. So that started the engine. Then when that died down, it was the Black Friday sales. Now, here's a couple of things. Do you believe those Black Friday sales numbers?
After looking at this link you just sent me from the big picture, which has a headline, no, Black Friday sales were not up 16%, not even 6%.
Some of the things that are problematic.
This was bullcrap, this whole thing. This Black Friday thing, by the way, let me just as a backgrounder. First of all, they've been publicizing the idea of a Black Friday for years. When I was a kid, I never heard of this, even the term. It's only recent. And so they've been hyping it and hyping it and hyping it, and then they opened all the stores early and got all these essentially white trash and everybody who looking for just a steal of a deal where they're selling stuff at cost or less. They're lost leaders. We're rushed into the store in this great photos. People were shooting each other, pepper spraying each other. It was mania to grab the one or two deals that were floating around Walmart and other big box places. And rushing out with that was their shopping for Christmas. It supposedly started off with a bang and kind of whimpered out during the whole process. I find the whole thing to be disturbing for a lot of different reasons.
Well, I think I agree with you with the idea that there was severely deep discounts, and is that going to flow down to the bottom line? Right? I mean, is that really relevant? So they have good sales, but if they're not making any money on it, who cares? The second thing is, they say there was a 16% increase. First of all, they told us that before the whole deal was over. So how do they know this? I mean, where's the real numbers coming from? But let's just go with that for a second. Let's go with the fact that there was a 16% increase in Black Friday sales. So let's also realize that a lot of stores like Walmart and many others opened up earlier than usual. They said, forget this whole Black Friday thing. We're doing it on Thursday. They opened up on Thursday at 10 o'clock till midnight or some other time. Now, I figure there's about 12 hours in a day shopping, if you really want to stretch it, the potential. And if you look at 2 hours extra that they were open for a day earlier and divide that, 2 divided by 12, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, totally. What is
that? What's that number?
I don't know.
I think it's
about 16%.
16% is exactly what it is.
Yeah, they said, here's what our sales would normally be. We're going to be 16% more open. So just add 16% and let's announce it.
Yeah.
So you think they dry labbed the whole thing?
It's possible because everybody, on Wednesday I heard that sales were better. You know what I'm saying? I was like, what's going on? I mean, it was like really early. We're getting all these really good vibes about Black Friday and all, and the whole deal's not even over, and I don't understand what you're talking about. So now I happened to go down to the Sawgrass Mall. My son wanted to go hang out there and for the Black Friday thing. So we went there Thursday night at about 10 or 11, and I went and I picked him up about 12, and there was like a giant vacuum suction machine sucking all the people from surrounding towns into this mall. It was unbelievable. I mean, they were parking like up trees.
Huh.
And I was like, I said to myself, what's so good? He goes, I don't know, I bought a shirt. There was like nothing really, everything was winter. It was loud.
A shirt.
He said, he bought a shirt, and he's bringing it back.
Ah! The irony.
Yeah. So Black Friday was supposedly really great, and everybody's all excited. And, you had all these companies just really blowing out. And I put a link up on my website, The Disciplined Investor, about, which sectors really did well. Then we had Cyber Monday, which was blowout numbers again. 1.5 billion, I think, was the number, biggest in history. It's very suspect in a time when confidence is low, stock markets are down, worry about the world, high unemployment, low value of your homes, debt at the yin yang, that we have the best Black Friday ever. Isn't there just something odd about that?
It makes zero sense. It's bullshit.
Yeah. So now, here's the end product of this, I think. So if in fact they did have, let's go with the fact that there was a 16% increase, and also agree that a lot of stores will open earlier or longer hours. Is it possible that we're going to see a cash for clunkers style pull forward? in sales, where everybody bought cars in, you know, that shortened period of time, but then the next 2 months nobody bought a car.
Yeah, now I'm thinking that's going to happen. Somebody pointed out to me that one of the things about the precursor to Black Friday, when all the retailers said, "Well, yeah, everyone indicated our sales are going to be as good or better," mentioned that those like 20,000 or more little stores have closed, driving the business. You know, these people have to buy somewhere, right? So they're pushing them to the big box stores. So they think their numbers are going up, when in fact they're just picking up, you know, people that are would have shopped someplace else normally.
But that's good for them. I mean, because they'll get the profit or they'll get the money. But again, we're looking at the overall picture, the overall spending.
Total. I mean, if Walmart is selling stuff at cost or below, and they're getting all these people, and they're, you know, running into these liability issues with people shooting each other. I don't know if it's going to really – I think it's going to – I mean, there's nothing at this point to see sales increase with profits decreasing. I don't know if that's necessarily going to get everybody all worked up.
So what do you think is worse? Do you think it's worse telling the truth in circumstances
heaven forbid
like this,
we tell the truth.
And let the chips fall where they may, or continually put the carrot in front of everybody's, you know, eyes that things are good, and when the reality hits, the crap really hits the fan. I mean, which one? Is it better to just postpone it and hope for the best?
Well, that's what they're doing. I think what, personally, and I've said this before, I think that both the EU and the U.S. would like to get through the Christmas season before they start telling the truth, because there's a lot of opportunity to, like, if you convince a lot of people that things are fine, maybe your sales will go up a little bit, and maybe the Christmas can be saved and or actually improved. Maybe you have good numbers. But then at some point, you're going to have to start telling the truth. But do it after Christmas. It's like, why would you fire somebody before Christmas? I mean, this is like the company, we just did a big layoff, you know, 3 days before Christmas. I mean, that's not the time to do this sort of thing. What you want to do is just push the can, you know, kick the can down the street, which is another rather new cliche.
Yeah.
Kick the can down the street till after Christmas, after New Year's, and then in January we'll deal with it. We'll actually be able to sit down and see what the problems are and discuss them like regular people.
So
that's my guess. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I'm thinking. That's what's going on. What else could it be?
Yeah. So just go back to the first discussion about these EU leaders sitting inside of a beautiful little bar and having drinks and all that. So while they're sitting there, they're coming up with their New Year's resolutions. They're going to go on a diet, drink less, tell the truth about economics, and things like that, right? That's basically what's going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you notice that it was kind of interesting how gas prices didn't really move over the last several weeks, but yet oil prices were up substantially?
Yeah, how does that work? I've never figured this out.
Well, that's a good question. I was wondering that myself, and there is some different drivers to gasoline prices clearly than there is oil, even though they're in the same, you know, genre. But I thought it was really interesting that oil prices are going up, but how convenient